UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has hailed a major report on climate change as a survival guide for humanity. Scientists from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, say that clean energy and technology can be exploited to avoid the growing climate disaster, but they also warned a key global temperature goal will probably be missed. They say the world is expected to warm more than 1.5 degrees Celsius by the early 2030s. That's over pre-industrial levels. Speaking at the launch of the report, Mr. Guterres says countries must work together quickly to achieve climate goals.
Humanity is on thin ice, and that ice is melting fast. As today's report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, details, humans are responsible for virtually all global heating over the last 200 years. The rate of temperature rise in the last half century is the highest in 2,000 years. Concentrations of carbon dioxide are at their highest in at least 2 million years. The climate time bomb is ticking.
Professor Bronwyn Hayward is a political science professor at the University of Canterbury and an IPCC report writer. And she spent an exhausting week in Switzerland working on the final product. She joins us from there now. Kia ora.
Morena, Kim. Sorry, I'm calling from a train station in Zurich, and somebody just came up to offer me a little ride. So that was why that was a little bit confusing there. But yeah, great to hear from you. And it has been a very full-on week.
Why was it so grueling? Why did you have to be so sleep deprived to do this?
Well, it ran over, partly I think one of the main reasons is that climate change has got real now. So governments around the world are facing major disasters and they're having a serious reality check of the costs of this. So there's a real tension between governments wanting to protect their own national interests and their people, and also whether they can afford and how much they can afford to contribute to actually reducing the problem, the global effort of cutting emissions. Because every country is facing a rising cost of living. Every country is facing interest rate rises, and they've got people who are really at high risk, some communities at extreme risk. So also acting together to cut emissions is crucial, but it's really hard to get agreement to do that.
It's hard because every government faced with rising cost of living on the one hand or climate change on the other, and an election is going to deal with the rising cost of living rather than climate change. Our government's not alone in that, is it?
No, most governments are really struggling with this issue. So what this report is saying, though, is it's never going to be cheaper. It's never going to be easier to work together to affect change. There's a couple of really significant issues that are coming out of this. One is we've already got the tools. We don't need to imagine new magical technology to do it. We just need the political and the collective will. A lot of countries are saying, and nearly every country says, oh, we're too small. It's just China and the US that they're the main problem. And what can we do? Well, the key issue is that the rest of the world makes up about two-thirds of the emissions. So what we do to cut emissions is significant. And one of the things that is probably quite important for people to understand from the new report is that cities are actually a key to this, because around the world, cities are the site of about 70% of our global emissions. So what we do in our local cities and our local communities really makes a difference to cut emissions. And that's kind of a more manageable thing for people to cope with. It can just seem like, how on earth can we cope and with the threats that are coming at us? This report says best practice is what they're calling climate resilient development, which is integrating adaptation actions to protect people with mitigation actions to cut emissions. And that's really easy to do in cities, or easier to do in cities, because it's things like your green spaces, your trees, your social protection, so that and your public transport, so that you're lowering fossil fuels. emissions and also providing effective ways for people to get around, and also thinking about social support for housing, for income replacement after disasters. So cities have emerged as a real key, and I think our debate has often been locked in an urban rural divide, and I think we need to get over that and say we have some really significant city opportunities for city leadership as well as rural leadership, and we need to be doing both.
There's a lot of money required to do all this.
Billions. Yeah, but there's a couple of things that are important from the statement this morning that Professor Lee, who's the chair of the IPC, said. You know, money is significant, but it's not everything, because you can't just throw money at the problem. We do actually also have to act to reduce emissions from the ground up. I mean, we often say, oh, it's just the big companies that have to do stuff, taking individual action makes no difference. Actually, now it's everything. It is individual action to reduce our own footprint. So here am I on a train station in Switzerland, having flown here. But once I got here, the cities and the communities in Switzerland make it really easy for me not to use any fossil fuels to get around, makes it really easy for me to have a pretty low carbon, low green stay while I'm here. Pretty low carbon and high green stay while I'm here. So taking collective action to help individuals make the right choices is important.
Here we are in New Zealand, however, where we are to a large extent dependent on the dairy industry for the money that we need to make people's lives better. And yet there is a call for the dairy industry to be much, much reduced in order to deal with climate change. That's a paradox that I don't think we can get our heads around very easily.
Yeah, it's a hard battle because we haven't thought about the fact that a just transition, like shifting your economy fairly from high-emitting industries to low, applies to agriculture and aspects of agriculture as well. So as a country, we encouraged a lot of farmers to take a lot of debt and to shift into dairy because it was great. We kid ourselves that we're feeding the world and that we're really efficient as farmers, and we have got some fantastic farming practices. But we're also exporting an enormous amount of milk powder that goes into confectionery and products, where we think, actually, what else can we be doing that is high value, makes a difference and emits less methane? Because methane is certainly in the sights of this report, while carbon is the big problem. It lasts over the long term. We're moving so quickly to 1.5 that we need to reduce our methane in order to be able to buy us some time to actually lower temperatures. This is hard for farmers in New Zealand. They say, look, we're doing everything we can. We actually have to do more. There's over 24 countries now, including Britain and the UK, Britain and America, who have sustained reducing emissions for 10 years. New Zealand has become an outlier. We're one of the only countries where our emissions are still rising. Our trade partners aren't going to accept that in the future. Negotiations are getting tough, and people are looking really hard at high polluting countries, and unfortunately, we're one of them. So if we want to shift some of our methane, we have to support farmers to do that. And we also have to take some city leadership as well.
Do you think that this report will change anything?
No. Yes, yes and no. I mean, this has been 8 years of slog. I've felt very proud of the 1.5 report because it brought issues forward. I think it's not the report that's going to change things. It's the fact that 196 governments have actually signed up to language that is much stronger. They've recognised that they have to act in this decade. This starts to affect their trade and their loans and their finance. They are recognising that they have to act in just and fair ways and reflect human rights and loss and damage. Now, that's all countries. That's America, Saudi Arabia, Brazil, China. This is very strong language that countries are recognising that they're liable and that they have responsibilities to protect human rights in a changing climate. That's a huge shift from where we were 10 years ago. Now we actually just have to make the big shift in practical action.
Professor Bronwyn Hayward, thank you for your time. That's Professor Hayward on a Zurich station where the trains are always on time.
Are they just?